want something more, more meaningful moments, opportunities, deeper relationships, and memorable experiences? Do you want to make a difference? If you said yes, a career in real estate could be the opportunity you're looking for. Guiding people through one of the most important decisions they ever made, the purchase or sale of their home, can be both rewarding and lucrative. Exit Realty has a revolutionary compensation model, training, and technology that provides you with the tools you need to start and build your successful real estate career. Call me today, Mimi Eubanks, your country realtor, at 843-730-3327. That's 843-730-3327. Or visit exitlowcountry.com/joinexit and make your exit today.
Good morning, and welcome to another episode of Exit Strategies Radio Show. I am your host, Colwyn J. Millett, broker and owner of Exit Realty Low Country Group in beautiful North Charleston, South Carolina. If this is your first time listening to this show, you, sir or ma'am, are in for a treat, because our mission here is very simple. That is to empower our community through financial literacy and real estate education. We're legacy building. That is what we do. So if you're out there making things happen with your family for the generations yet to come, you know, our word teaches us to leave a legacy, to leave an inheritance for our children, and so forth and so on. We want you to put a hashtag on that thing that says that you are legacy building, because that is what you are doing. You can find us on Facebook, YouTube, Anchor FM. You can also find us on Instagram at our website, ExitStrategiesRadioShow.com. You can catch us in a number of different places on your favorite podcast applications. We appreciate you listening. Please share this content with your friends, your family, your coworkers, even those in your groups, your church groups, etc., guys. Because sometimes the message and the word that we are speaking here today is for you. Sometimes it is for someone else that you know. Again, we appreciate you listening. Let's get started. So good morning, and good morning, guys. Welcome to another fabulous episode of Exit Strategies Radio Show. I'm your host. Yes, that is me, Colwyn J. Millett, broker and owner of Exit Realty, Low Country Group in beautiful North Charleston, South Carolina. If this is your first time listening to this show, you, sir or ma'am, are in for a treat. That is because our mission here is very simple. That is to empower our listeners, our community, through financial literacy and real estate education. Guys, we are legacy building. So we have been doing great things. I'm super excited. We've been getting amazing guests to come and drop jewels and nuggets on you, sharing their stories, sharing their passions, providing you information and opportunities. And we know that many of you are out here working to capitalize on those. So today, our word for today is going to be capital. That is money. Moolah. Okay. So we're going to be talking about that. And we have a very, very special guest with us today, none other than Kevin Amos with Pine Financial Group. Kevin, how you doing today, my man?
Corwin, that was great. You know, I really love that intro. I could learn something from you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here. You're right. We're going to drop some nuggets today.
So look here, I'm super duper excited, because see, with some, I hit a little bit of OJ's on them and say that money, you know, money. Yeah. So look here, I won't do that per se today. Maybe too late, you don't put that on air. But Kevin, if you don't mind, tell our listeners a little bit about you, who you are and what you do.
Yeah, for sure. So I got started investing in real estate super young. I was in the Army. I went into the Army out of high school. They told me, join the Army, be all you could be. I'll tell you what, you don't even have to worry about school anymore. I'm going to teach you how to play laser tag. This is going to be amazing. So I was sold on the laser tag, Corwin, and I went into the Army, and it was very different than that. But it was a great experience. And the thing about the Army is you don't make very much money, really nothing at all, but you don't spend money either. I was living in the barracks. My truck was paid off. I was working out of the gym in the barracks. Mm-hmm. So I was saving this money, and it's like, well, what do I do with this? So I started reading books, and then, you know, you hit the ones that everyone talks about, the Rich Dad Poor Dad, and the other investment books that talk about real estate, and all of these experts. I was really looking up to them as I was reading their books, and they were saying real estate. So I decided to try it out. And I bought my first house. I was just turning 21, moved out of it, kept it as a rental, and I saw the appreciation. I saw the tenant paying off my mortgage for me. I saw the tax benefits and the cash flow and all of the things that we know help make us rich in this business. I saw it and I decided, you know, this is the vehicle that's going to make me rich. This is the one I'm going to use to build my wealth. And so I started focusing in on it, and I started buying a house or two houses every month while I was in college and working, and anyone could do it.
Mm-hmm. So matter of fact, let's hover there for a minute first before we go to where you are. So we had a recent conversation, and this thing has been stuck with me. So I've been really talking about how we can leverage real estate over the long term and how we're failing oftentimes. And, you know, we get caught up in life. You know what I'm saying? You want to go buy the house that you're going to, quote unquote, you're going to live in forever. So you work, you work, you work, you work, you work, work. You try to save, you try to save. Inevitably, the car that you got goes down. So you got to buy another car. And all these life things keep happening, which slow you down from getting there. But if you're to meet a need, if you start fundamentally with, like you said, you started buying houses when you're in college, you start with the simple, okay, let me buy this. Let me move in. Let me do this. I can sell this, make some money, reinvest, and you keep going and growing. And if you keep a portfolio along the way. So I'm going to share this, Kevin, and I'm going to stop because our listeners need to hear from you today, and they are going to. But I had a client years and years ago, and he started very similarly. He bought a property, wasn't that young when he bought it, but he went and borrowed money, bought a house, moved into it, worked on it, fixed it, sold it. Country boy went back to the bank, said, hey, Bo, I need some more money. I just sold a house. So he borrowed enough money and bought two houses. And he moved in one, fixed it up, sold it, moved into the other one, fixed it up, and then turned that to a rental, and then went and bought another house. And he just kept going. And by the time I met him, you know, how many years later, he had accumulated, he was still holding about 70 some odd properties. But at one point in time, he had owned as many as 140 something.
Wow.
And that's what this thing is about. So tell our listeners, what is it that you're doing?
Yeah, I love hearing that story. And it just reminds me of a monopoly, you know, four greenhouses, one red hotel, four greenhouses. What? I mean, that's how you do. You collect this. And I joke about it sometimes, like I collected baseball cards and that kind of thing growing up. But, you know, we all have something that we really like and we start collecting. I just happen to like houses. So I collect those.
So we were talking about, what are you doing now? So I know you're on the lending side now, and you're now empowering others financially to make these things happen. So tell our listeners about that.
Yeah. So the progression was, like, I was doing a lot of deals, a lot of transactions, and I was young. You know, I was 23, 24, 25 years old. This was leading up to 2008 when that crash hit. And we could talk about that if you'd like. That was a very challenging time in my career. But what I was learning through the process is, look, in order to be successful, to buy houses without cash and credit and really nothing, because I was broke. I was eating Top Ramen. That's how I was always lived on a budget, and I was eating Top Ramen. And I was buying houses. And what I learned was I need to get really creative to be successful because I don't have the resources other people have. Mm-hmm. So how do I do this without the money and that, without someone helping me co-sign on houses and all of this? And what I learned was the way you structure a real estate transaction has everything to do with how you're going to fund it. The way I structured my offers, the way I negotiated the deals, the words I was using in those negotiations had everything to do with how I was planning to take the property down. So I really fell in love with deal structure, the hunt and the kill, they say, but the deal structure is what I really fell in love with. And that's the financing. So I just migrated to that side of the business. I got recruited to do mortgages, like conventional mortgages. And that was a pain in the ass. Like you're dealing with underwriting guidelines that you don't understand, and they're constantly changing. And here we are leading up to a crash. And I was approving people to buy their dream homes, like you were talking about, right? And they're getting ready to buy these homes, and all of a sudden the guideline changed and they no longer qualify. And I had no control over that, but I had to make that phone call, right? I picked up the phone. I called them and said, look, you don't get your dream home anymore. That was devastating, man. I was losing sleep. So I decided I have to get control of my business. And what I found was if I could raise money from private investors, just private capital, capital is the key word, right? Yep, I was bringing in private capital and I was loaning that out to real estate investors because that's the business I do. So I brought in private money, loaned it out. I created the underwriting. We service all the loans now. So that's how I really got control. And now we use common sense underwriting.
Okay. All right. I like that. So you guys are structured to look more at the deal versus the other pieces of it. Is that probably fair to say?
The way we should look at it now, I'm looking at the whole package, quite honestly, but the deal carries the most weight. Look, if I can help my client make money, then that's what I want to do. I'm not going to put them into a deal that's going to be a loser, even though I can make money on it and they would lose, right? That's just not how we operate. What I want is them to be successful. And we've built our company around that. If our clients succeed, we'll succeed. I know they'll come back and borrow from me again and again and again, and then they're going to refer their friends, and then we're all going to make money.
So let's talk real quick about the difference between, because I mean, I know it, you know it. Most people don't know it. They don't know that you have different, like you said, traditional, conventional lending, private lending, and there's other options as well. So tell our listeners, if you could, give the difference or your definition of the difference between the two.
Yeah. When you hear about conventional, I mean, most people, when they hear conventional, they think of actual conventional, which would be anything purchased by Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae are the largest buyers of notes. So to give you an example, you might go to your mortgage broker and they're going to do your refinance for you on your home. And now they might get the money from Wells Fargo, for example, to fund your deal and do your refinance. But Wells Fargo doesn't keep that loan. Mm-hmm. They sell that loan to Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac so they can free up that capital so they can go out and loan it out again because they're a fee business. They want to make fees, but they keep the servicing rights, which is also a fee. So you'll still make your payment to Wells Fargo, but they don't own that loan. Chances are very high that Fannie or Freddie purchased that note. So that's the true conventional. Now, each of those entities have a very specific box you have to stay within. FHA loans, VA loans, that kind of all falls under the same category, pretty restrictive. You have to fit in the box. So a lot of times when you hear conventional, it's really conventional or Fannie or Freddie is a conventional or FHA, VA. And then you have banks, which gets more creative, especially your regionals or your community banks. So if you think about a community bank, like maybe 1, 2, 3, 4 branches, something like that, rather small, they can really get creative. They oftentimes they'll keep the notes on their books. We call this portfolio lending or portfolio loans. And because they stay on the bank's books, they're not selling to Fannie or Freddie. They can have their own rules within reason. There's still regulation, but they can have their own rules. So that's how you get the blanket loans and things like that. So you can really scale up. We were talking about, you talked about your friend that owned over 100 properties. Look, you can't do that with conventional loans, right? You have to get more creative. So maybe he went to bank financing and did a loan over 20 or 30 properties in one loan, something like that. So that would be another type of financing. And then you can get really creative when you get to the private side. So if you could raise capital yourself or borrow from someone like me that has raised the capital for you, now we can get really creative, right? There is pretty much no rules to that. As long as we're not doing consumer lending, we don't have TILA, we don't have RESPA, we don't have TRID, we don't have any of those regulations. So it's really as creative as we want to get.
And that's freeing. So most people, they're always focused on, and it's what everybody else does. Let's put it that way. They're trying to figure out how to make a transaction work. But if you're buying a fix and flip, most traditional banks don't want to touch something that needs extensive renovation. There's too much risk in it. Yeah. So you need someone or need an option that's specialized for that type of property. Again, flips, if that's what you're doing, if you're doing other type of transactions, whether it be a commercial, those kind of things, that is similar where you're leveraging, you're repurposing, and then you're getting yourself back out of it. Those kind of opportunities, or you're going to find it limited to find that in the traditional lending space, you're going to need to go something more private where people are in it for the investment. And they understand it. Like you say, you understand real estate investing. So that way you can look at the property, you can look at the comparables, you can look at the estimate for work, and you'll have a reasonable understanding of the potential that deal to be done successfully, and then would be willing to lend money on it. Kevin, let me ask you this. What is like, because you guys lend to first time, but also experienced people.
Right.
So what if it was a first time person? Because we want to talk to our people today and just say, hey, look, you can get over the hump. Most times people are just afraid to get started. So in getting over the hump, what is the number one thing that you run into? And I'm pretty sure I know the answer, but what's the number one thing that you run into when you're working with someone who is new to this space and getting them started? What's the number one obstacle?
Oh, there's no question about it. It's fear of failure. It's not taking the action. So typically when they're working with us, they're ready to take action. They actually do. But we're in a lending business, so we need a big funnel, right? We put everybody in the funnel and we just narrow it down to the people that we're actually going to try to lend to. So our philosophy is, let's just help as many people as we can make money. So we want to capture like a big funnel and get everybody in here. Let's work with you and help you make money. I'll teach you how to do it. Try the best that we can to give you the confidence to do it. And then it's going to be up to you to go out and do it. And then that's when the funnel really starts narrowing down. So the obstacle that we're seeing is people are just so afraid of that failure that they don't even take the action. And this is what drives me crazy, Corbin. And we could talk about this. And when we do seminars and classes, I'm always bringing this up. But look, you're going to fail. Like 100%, it's going to happen. So if that's your fear, well, this isn't the right business, right? Because it's going to happen. So my thought is, let's just accept the fact that we're going to make mistakes, accept the fact that we're going to trip and fall, like when we're learning to walk, and accept the fact that we're going to get up and be stronger and better for it. And then once we can accept that, and then we can move forward, that's how we get rich. That's how we build wealth. That's how we build a legacy, as you say.
So it's interesting you should say that, because one, Kevin, I tell people in conversations and stuff that the average millionaire goes broke 3 times. And, you know, I've seen that, read that on their way to that million or to being a millionaire. And what happens is they fail forward. So if I today this, okay, whatever, they know how to get back. And so one of the challenges is that people are, you know, and not that you should want to have loss. I mean, it's not that you set out to lose,
right?
But the regrouping, because you got to work yourself back to where you were. So if I was at this point and I made a misstep on this investment in this property and I ended up losing, one, I just learned something that I shouldn't do again. So then that's going to should accelerate me now to get past that phase, because I've already made this mistake. I shouldn't make it twice.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
And you're moving forward.
Exactly. So now the next time, okay, well, look, I already understand what the pitfalls are, because really and truly, that's something that you guys have learned. And that's also something that people, you know, I have an investor I've been working with, Ms. Evans. We've been working together, her and Pastor. I'm sorry, let me make sure if I don't say it now, he's going to get me. But Pastor Evans Senior, I can put that senior on there, because if not, he's going to call me and say, boy, who would you get my name right? But, you know, we've been working together for now 16, 17, getting close to 18 years. And in that time period, the things that they've ran into in other places, they know. So when they go into a house, it is, okay, well, I got to put the hot water heater in the pan, because they're very particular. So if a home inspector says, hey, this needs to be done, they want to do it. They're not going to argue about it. They want the house to be right. They want to give someone a great product, which they do. They do a wonderful job. So all the things that they've encountered over the years, hot water heater needs to be in a pan. Expansion tank needs to be on it, which is now cold in our area. I don't know about yours, Kevin. I'm sorry, of electrical panel needs to be labeled. When they go in, that's the first thing they're looking at. They already know windows and doors and roof and all that kind of stuff and plumbing fixtures and light fixtures and flooring and paint and HVAC. They already look at that, but now they're looking at these little nuances to say this, because they've had it come up on an inspection. So now they want the inspection to come back so clean that the inspector came and find nothing wrong with it. So that's number one. So going and putting the same mindset in what we're talking about, if you've had the experience, okay, I know I don't need to do that again. So next time I already know what I need to do with this phase. And then I just need to figure out what's going on past that.
And you're going to make mistakes as an expert too, as an experience. I'm thinking about some investors right now as I'm listening to you talk. Like, you have a very successful client, sounds like. We do as well. And the most successful ones, the $1 million a year or more guys, they're still making mistakes. Mm-hmm. But I'll tell you what, they make a hell of a lot more money now than they would have if they never tried.
That is fair. It's risk. So everyone wants reward, but don't want to accept the risk. And we understand that there is a reward that's commensurate with the risk. The greater the risk, the greater the reward. You know, we are operating from a lot. This new material, Kevin, we operating from a lottery mentality where we pay $2 and win millions. That's how we want to operate in real estate. That's not effective. That's not the same, right?
And we're entitled to that winning, right? Okay. We're living a very much an entitled, how do you say it? I feel like our youth is entitled to everything. and they're not willing to work for what, and it's going to create a problem. It's just going to, because you can't be self-made and have it given to you, I guess.
So I deserve to win, but we know that in order to win, you got to play the game. So I deserve to win. So you're telling me I'm going to win before I even play the game.
I'm entitled to it. I don't need to work.
Yeah. So I'm going to be a real estate investor and I'm going to do this, but I'm never going to have this happen. That's unrealistic.
Amazing. Just so amazing to me. The mentality of that.
So let's talk about some of the products you guys offer. What kind of options do people have in working with you and your company?
Yeah, so we have two sides to our business, which I've described a little bit, but just for clarity, we have our private passive investors. So people that invest in our fund and they just want the passive return, debt position. So it's very safe, very stable, all of that. It's not your home run investment, but it's something that's you can count on. It's going to produce. So that's where our capital comes from that we loan out to our real estate investors. So that's one side. The other side is obviously the real estate investors. And these are the guys that are out there adding value. So they're buying properties, fixing them up and refinancing them for rentals. We hear about the BRRRR strategy, right? Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of clients do that. We have a lot of clients that fix and flip. They watch the TV shows, they get really excited, and then they go out and do it and they make a ton of money. So we have our fix and flip clients and we have commercial repositioning. So about 20% of our business is commercial.
Okay.
We could talk more about the commercial, some of the risks in there, because right now it's a bit more risky to be doing that with the current environment. But let's say you buy an apartment building that's half vacant or mostly vacant or whatever. Banks won't loan on that. Mm-hmm. Just like you were saying, for a house that's not habitable, well, if an apartment building isn't cash flowing, a bank doesn't want it. It's not stabilized, they call it. So someone like us can come in and help them rehab the units, get it rented up. And then once it's producing, then they go to the bank and get it refinanced. So repositioning an asset like an apartment building, or now we're starting to see some more conversions, hotel and office to apartments because there's a housing shortage. We did a Safeway building where they converted it to a swim school and a gym. Avasa Fitness moved in there. So they converted a bigger box into smaller bays. So on the commercial side, you can get super creative wherever you see a demand. And if you can create or provide that, then that's where people are making money.
Which makes perfect sense. Makes perfect sense. Let me do this because, Kevin, we're quickly getting to the end of the show. I want to make sure people know where to reach you. So how can our listeners get in contact with you?
So we have some free reports that I can give out to your listeners if you want to go to thepinereport.com. And so there's just some free stuff on there for them to look at. You can reach me at pinefinancialgroup.com. That's our company website. Whether you want to be a private passive investor or if you're a real estate investor. The thing though, Corin, is we don't lend in your area. Hard money and private money is very location specific. A lot of lenders like me are like that. That's how we keep our investors' money safe. We know the areas that we lend in. So we're in Denver, Minnesota, and we're in Wisconsin. And then we're starting to do some business in Washington, D.C. So that's the furthest east we've come so far. Wow.
Okay. Well, look, that's a reach, man. You go into the district, man. That's a reach day. You go into the district. Real.
We were doing business there maybe 5 or 6 years ago. We had a hedge fund that was providing all the money. So it was zero risk for us. And then that partnership started to dissolve. So we pulled out of DC. And so that's why it made an easy transition to go back in, because we already had some established relationships.
Okay, good. Well, congratulations. Good for you. Definitely good for the group. For our listeners, guys, please make sure y'all go to the Pine Report, thepinereport.com. I just hit the site. There's a wealth of information there, download, all that stuff, but get exposed to this. So, Kevin, look, I've been asking like our guests and stuff, if you have them on, that thing that if you would have known this way back yonder when, which if you would have known it and therefore acted on it, it would have accelerated your development and growth. Give me something, Kevin, for the listeners. Drop a drop. It's our mic drop question.
Yeah. So this is an easy one for me because I made a big mistake. I had my ego in my way. And this is humbling to say, but I was popular in the real estate investment associations because I was so young and I was doing so much business. And so people were attracted to that. And I got attracted to that. So I was making my goals, my annual goals, based all around the number of properties I was buying because it sounded cool. And I thought that made me cool. But the reality was I was buying deals that weren't good just so I could hit that goal. So what I wish I would have known then was be very careful with your goals if you're as committed as probably your listeners are to accomplishing goals. If you're really committed to accomplishing that goal, setting that goal is so important. And doing it for your ego isn't the right way to do it. So I would definitely have made goals based on cash flow or income and not on number of properties.
Wow. That's profound, because you don't hear that. Most people, you're driving, you're pushing. But what I just heard you say in there is that all that driving and pushing caused you to make some investments that if you had been focused differently, you would not have made.
Right. And then that led right into 2008. So that was painful. I had 55 doors, all single family homes when I entered that.
And that is the low, at that point in time, it would have been much more advisable to have, instead of having scattered site, to have multifamily, get your doors in one place so you can better manage and better control them. Yeah.
Yeah, or just, and focus on cash flow, right?
Yeah.
I wanted to buy a house a month. So I did that whether it was a good deal or not, so I could hit my goal. It's just the quality of the, you hear it all the time. What's the quality of the questions you ask, mm-hmm. whether it's to your own self or to your mentors or your friends or whatever, the mm-hmm. quality of the question matters, even to your own self. So this is just quality of the goal I was setting for myself. It was just poor quality.
Interesting. Very interesting. Well, Kevin, again, thank you. We have quickly reached the end of today's show, but Kevin, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to drop these jewels and nuggets on our listeners. I really appreciate you.
Yeah, Corbin, I really appreciate you as well. Thank you.
You're welcome. So for our listeners, guys, look, y'all have gotten it. Y'all have been exposed to some great information. You probably learned something about something just over the fence that you didn't know. So we want to make sure that we apply it. We don't want this information to just linger. We don't want to take, quote unquote, the seed, and we don't want to cast it among the swine so it gets trampled. We want to plant it on fertile soil so it will grow, so that it will flourish. And we need to continue to water it. So we're going to ask you to continue to engage, to continue to plug in, to continue to be a part of the Exit Strategies Radio Show family so that you can grow your seed. Kevin, again, thank you so much from the bottom of my heart for being a part of the Exit Strategies Radio Show family, for being on with us today. For our listeners, for our final time today, you know how I feel. You know what I say. I'm going to put them together and I'm going to do it this way. I love you. I love you. I love you. And we're going to see you guys out there in those streets. Guys, that was a great show today. And we thank you so much for taking the time to listen to Exit Strategies Radio Show. My name is Corwin J. Millett. Yes, that is me. And I thank you from the bottom of my heart for tuning in for today's episode. Exit Strategies is my baby. It is how I give back to our community. It is how I foster goodwill, spread good news, and trustfully help you get great results. Guys, as I always say to you, I love you, I love you, I love you. And we're going to see you guys out there in the streets.